Welcome, podcasters, another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tomester Dahl, joined again, once again, by the fabulous Jill Simonello. How are you, Jill?
I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's actually, it's kind of reversed. It's a rainy day here in Nebraska, as opposed to Chicago always being rainy this time of year. It's been really cold and nasty.
Okay, we've got cold and nasty today too, so thanks. I'm sure you sent that our way because we had a really good week last week.
I know. What the heck, spring? Let's get straightened out. As a reminder for those folks, that this episode is brought to you by our friends at HID Extra. Go to HIDExtra.com to view the best in HID and LED headlight conversion kits and accessories for your truck or SUV. And while you're there, use the code PPT15 to get 15% off your lighting order today. Check out the show notes. I'll have a link to their site for more logos. Did you like how I do that? Just kind of rolled it into the show.
That was well done. That was actually really, really well done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I just thought I actually printed it out this time. I was ready to go.
Amazing what happens when you're just a little bit prepared.
I know. You're rubbing off on me. I'm not sure I like it. let's get to some news. Let's get to the latest news. And we're going to talk about news. I have an interview for the middle segment with a Toyota engineer for USBs. Which was a very interesting conversation about how many USBs they actually put in a vehicle and where they place them. And then we're going to wrap up. Jill saw a very exciting SUV at her meeting today. Want to talk about that. But so let's first get the news. The biggest news item that I just came out today, maybe even a couple hours ago, was Toyota is recalling a massive amount of Tacomas. And it's 228,216 in 2017 Toyota Tacomas. I say massive because they sell like 15,000 a month. I mean, that's a big chunk of Tacomas over the last 2 years that they're recalling. I would wager it's probably in the 80 percentile range. The recall is about leaking differential fluid in the rear differential. Essentially, no oil back there means your gearing gets all gets shavings. It actually grinds shavings off the rear differential, and it actually lock up. Which, if you think about a rear axle locking up, it's probably a bad idea for a truck. It's probably not something you really want to do. I've seen a couple of pictures of this online, and it's basically around the pumpkin back there, that round that covers the differential. There's just oil on some people's Tacomas leaking out around it.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how in the factory process that would not get torqued down to all the way to the right spec. So, something to keep in mind there. There'll probably be a letter coming out next month or so, but I would, if I have a Tacoma in that model year, 2016, 2017, I'd be crawling underneath and taking a very close look at that. And it's pretty easy to put more oil in if you need to in a pinch, but I would take it to a dealer. So that was the Toyota recall. And then we got a couple of spy photos of new vehicles. It's that time of year. It's that time of year where they're out product testing it. They're out testing the models to get ready for Detroit in January or LA, depending on where they want to unveil and which place. The GMC Sierra Silverado has been spotted yet again in the mountains of Colorado. This is their high altitude testing. Have you seen the pictures of these new trucks? You really can't. You really can't. They're all clad.
I'm not really into spy photography. I occasionally, it's really funny because occasionally you'll see some in Chicago, which is a really, I think, weird place to find a camouflaged car. But when I see one, I was just like, oh, you know, that's kind of cool. It's kind of, but I never really seek it out. So.
Yeah, the spy photographers somehow can determine all this stuff behind this camouflage cam. We get these notes like, oh, that's a new exhaust, or not exhaust, but that's a new bumper thing, that's a new grill. And I'm looking at these things going, how can you tell?
Yeah, I can't even tell it's a BMW. How can you tell that the new, you know, that the bumper is new? I got nothing.
I can't do that. It's on our Facebook page. I shared a couple stories of the GMC Sierra. The story with that truck is they're still talking diesel. I mean, Chevy's doing everything in diesel these days, same as GMC. Acadia Terrain is going to have diesels. They're talking about 10-speed with probably a 3-liter to 3.5-liter diesel, which would make sense for the marketplace. Jeep Wrangler spotted again, spied. This one was more hilarious in that the Jeep Wrangler mule was pulled over in the streets of L.A. Apparently, he blew through a red light and the cops pulled him over. Now, I'm kind of suspicious whether the cops are... So imagine you're a police officer and you're patrolling and you see something camouflaged. Let's say you're a big Jeep Wrangler fan and you see something that looks like a Jeep Wrangler to go by. Are you just going to pull him over to take a look? I mean, I don't know what the protocol there. Oh, you got a tail light out. I pulled you over. Check out tail light out.
Your taillights aren't to spec. I need to have a conversation with you about that.
Right. I think you changed them, right? Didn't you? No. That's supposed to have an 8-speed. They're talking about 8-speed in that, a diesel in that, and a turbocharged gasoline in that. The reason they're doing all the stuff is because fuel economy is terrible and current Wrangler need improvement. All right. So there's your quick take on those news. Let's get to the bigger news item that I think was interesting to talk about was sales. So the industry, since 2009, has been like blowing the doors off stuff, right? I mean, every year it's like huge increases. We're at 17 million units. This year they're talking about a decrease. It's a sales drop of 0.1% is what the estimates are. They're expecting everybody to kind of come down a little bit. Interestingly enough, they're expecting GM and Subaru to keep steady.
Yeah.
Interesting. I would think Subaru because they have new products, but GM is a little different. What do you think? I mean, we've been on a high for a long, long time. At some point, we got to come down from that, right?
Yeah, you know, you do. And I don't know that you can classify this necessarily as a sales drop, as more of a sales plateau. And I think it's normal. I mean, people have, everything crashed in like 2008. Everything just crashed. People stopped spending money. You know, housing values just went down. Everything just tanked and people just stopped spending money. So as the economy started to rebuild, you know, 2009 was still a pretty crappy year. But once things started to go up, people had money again to begin spending money on new vehicles. So they had been living with these old vehicles for a period of time. And I would say probably around 2000, and I'm totally just pulling this out of my head. I don't have any numbers to back this up. But probably around 2014 is when I think people really started to buy again. And people were starting, you know, the consumer confidence went up and people were starting to spend money. And so here we are in 2017, everybody who needed a new car bought a new car. And it's not that like people aren't going to buy new cars. You have a lot of people who lease, you have a lot of people who just like changing cars. But I think the people who really needed to buy a new car, like they were literally putting Band-Aids on their vehicle, finally had the money to be able to buy that vehicle. So those people are taken care of. So I don't think that what is going on is necessarily anything to do with the economy or politics. I think it's just we finally recovered and we finally hit that saturation point.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. But it's really interesting. You get two different takes on this. So you get the idea that we're having a sales drop or sales plateau, you know. And then I was talking with Toyota recently about that, and he said, look, my executives tell me if we're at 17 million units and we're stuck there, okay, you know, that's not a bad problem to have, to be selling that much volume all the time. So I just thought it was interesting because you do read these news stories that, oh my goodness, the world is coming to an end. The sales auto industry is cooling and I don't know.
Sky is falling.
I will be more interested to follow along with the lease rates. So leasing was really good in 2014 and 13. People were leasing quite a bit. And so you have this glut of off-lease vehicles coming in 17 and 18 that'll get hit the marketplace. And so as a consumer, if you're looking for a used truck or a used SUV, in this year and even next year, if that off-lease vehicle is probably going to be a really good bargain because it's such a glut in that segment, they're going to start offering really good deals on that. So something definitely to keep in mind when you're out there shopping. It's going to be a buyer's market still for quite a while. I don't see incentives playing a big deal as they used to. I don't know if Chevy's going to do a lot more incentives. They've capped their production, so they're not going to be as many trucks in the marketplace. And Ford doesn't seem like they're offering as much incentives as they used to because they're selling hotcakes. And with new Ram Horizon, you would expect Ram to follow suit too. So as far as truck size, there won't be a whole lot of incentives. There'll be some incentives to SUVs. I still think that's going to be a growing market. So that was the news. It was exciting. It was fantastic news. Let's get next to the interview I have with Toyota's Clint Williams, and he'll discuss cost and USBs and all that stuff that you wonder, why the heck they don't just put one more into my vehicle? What the heck? We'll be right back with that interview. And welcome back to more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradal. Today, on the phone, we're doing an interview with Clint Williams. And Clint, welcome to the show. Can you tell people what you do with Toyota?
Thank you. I work on the heater control panels, all the switches and sockets in the cars, and the audio systems in Toyota vehicles.
And we're talking to you today because we had an interesting discussion happen on my personal Facebook page about USBs and electronics in cars, and there's a whole lot of changing going on with plugging in your cell phone to a car. It's a huge topic. How many USB plugs do you have? How fast they charge? It's a growing consumer need. And so I wanted to ask you, how does the system work? I mean, just come and give me a layman's viewpoint. How does the USB charger work in the 12-volt car system?
A USB in a 12-volt system is basically an independent device. We essentially package it in the car. We try and put it where our customers want to use it, and we identify the use case for it. So where exactly is a device need to be? Where does it need to be plugged in? And it then connects into the electrical system of the vehicle, and it's essentially a self-contained unit, just requiring 12 volt from the car.
Okay, so why is it that some vehicles seem these days to have more USB ports, plugins, and other ones don't? Is it just a design decision to have one, or is there like technical limitations to having more than one USB connector?
I think there's many different factors. I think in fundamental terms, we, as a electronic design engineer for a car company, I have to consider cost, mass, and performance. That's the bare bones of it. And sometimes it might be cost related. But otherwise, a decision is made throughout our organization of how many to put in the vehicle, where to put them. And then with that, we have limitations regarding packaging, space for them. Even the wiring requires additional space. So that all these things need to be considered as to where we put it and how many.
And are there things that are USBs? I was doing some research today, and there's different technical versions of USBs. But are there higher speed charging USBs than there are non-higher speed charging? Does that factor into your cost and thinking about which ones you use?
Yes, it does. We consider what consumer electronics and other devices are out there, what their charging needs are, whether or not we'd expect them to be used in our vehicles, and use that to determine what we do next or what we put in the car.
So as far as what they're charging, so are you thinking that most consumers are just going to charge their cell phones up, and is that kind of where you're planning out as far as what kind of USB to put in the car?
Without getting into too much about our future plans, we consider things more broadly than that. What are the devices being brought into the car? Who are the people in the car? You know, you've got youngsters through all ages. What are they using? And what are their charging needs? We consider all of that.
And that's all contained in that USB charger. And then these days we have these new devices, and kind of what sparked the conversation was we have these fast charging devices that plug into like a 12 volt. And they're supposed to get 2 times more power and things like that as far as more USB power to charge things. Are we going to keep that, I guess I call it the old cigarette lighter. I guess I call it the old, that 12-volt charger. Is that going to stay in vehicles? Is that something that is just part of the system? Can we replace that with more USBs? I mean, where do you see that going as industry-wise?
At the moment, it has a place. We still have customers requiring use of that system. To give you one example, I know that our customers use radar detectors, and they typically use the old cigarette lighter style 12-volt socket. And so when our customers stop demanding such charging needs, we'll make a decision what we do in the future. On vehicles currently in production at Toyota, if we have a specific USB charge port.
Speaking of like capacity and limitations and things, is there a limit to how many USBs you can put in a car?
Oh, good question. I think the question of whether or not our electrical system could support many, many USB ports, I can't answer that today. I don't know the answer. But I think we know that our customers are bringing more devices into the car, and we know that they're demanding it. They want more, so we're considering that demand in what we provide into Toyota vehicles.
What about USB placement things? Does that change up like your design decisions? Like you're talking about wiring, and we know the front of these dashes is full of wiring. I have a 62 Chevy and I think I got like six wires up there. And I pull off the dash of a new car and you got armfuls of wiring, right? I mean, and so when you're wiring and sending wires around and different things, there's a lot of decisions about where that wire goes as far as doesn't get pinched, right? Because if you get pinched, doesn't work, and placement and design. How much time do you spend thinking through all the placements and designs of those of where those USB chargers go?
Enormous amounts of time. You should be a design engineer here. You've kind of covered what we need to go through. We'd definitely consider wire length, wire size. That's based on the current carrying capacity of the USB, the placement of the USB. We're putting it in places where we've never put a USB before, so we need to study that deeply and make sure that it will actually work in that position and doesn't have any other side effect. So yeah, it's definitely something that we think through quite thoroughly.
I'd imagine you probably get some pretty interesting questions from designers, and you're probably saying, "You want a USB where? How do you want it to go? Where should it sit?"
Yeah, exactly.
Are there concerns with placing USBs in spots as far as like, did those cables get affected by heat and cold? And so, do you have to worry about like HVAC ducts and where you're placing them there?
Look, I don't want to give too much away about our the way in which we do our checks and balances for design, but we have quite a large and extensive list of checks that we must conduct for wherever we place a USB, including the wire harness that connects to it and the way that the power is delivered. So, we definitely cover many items.
Yeah, last thing you want to do is probably read a review or a customer complaint where the USB stops working, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, hey, thanks for being on the show today. I'll go ahead and let you get back to deciding where how to wire in USBs all in random spots in cars these days.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, and we'll be right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. And we're back with the final segment today on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk Show. We're going to talk about the Jeep Cherokee Trackhawk. Jill was just recently at a meeting and they had one there and she was out there checking it out. So, is it as sexy as a beast as we think it is on the pictures?
You know, it really was, and it was outside, so you got to, and not that it was a sunny day in Chicago, but you got to see a little bit of what it looked like in the natural light. And unfortunately, the color that they used was a show car color, so it's not a color that is going to actually make it into production. It was this beautiful deep ruby red color that just glittered. It was very pretty. But spent some time walking around it, took some pictures, sat inside, and comfortable seats, and just they even turned it on for us, and we got to hear the exhaust note. I know it was pretty cool. But just I mean, okay. So we talked about the Trackhawk a little bit in a previous segment when they launched it in New York. But just to refresh your memory in case you missed that episode, this is a Jeep Grand Cherokee, so large vehicle, that has a Hellcat engine in it. 707 horsepower. You're looking at what is it? The track time or the 3.5, it's saying 0 to 60 miles per hour is going to be 3.5 seconds. That's fast. That's a really heavy vehicle that is going to go from 0 to 60 miles per hour, like faster than most cars do.
It is pretty incredible when you think about how they pulled that off.
Yeah, and that's almost it's like 200 horsepower more than the regular just Grand Cherokee SRT. So I mean, this is an amazing engine horsepower, whatever. I've been I was talking to Kellyanne Wright, who is the regional PR rep for Chicago area, and I've been trying to talk her into maybe bringing it to one of our rallies for the Midwest Automotive Media Association, and she's just like, there's stuff going on, and I'm just like, so I'm gonna take that as maybe, but I'm never gonna take the no. But so nobody has actually had the chance to drive this yet, except for the SRT guy who was standing beside the vehicle looking ominous, making sure we didn't touch anything wrong. I think he's the only guy who's been able to drive. Like the Jeep Compass, it was a Jeep Compass meeting today for the Midwest Automotive Media Association. So the Jeep Compass brand manager was actually on hand, and she said she hadn't even had the chance to drive it yet. So, you know, not that she's the brand manager for that vehicle, but, still, you think that's still fancy.
Yeah. You think they'd have a employee day, you know, right? Bring exactly. The track hawk. Yeah, sure.
But it was very cool, and it was funny because I took a picture specifically. There's actually a launch control button in the Jeep, and everybody's like, "Man, can you imagine that Jeep with a launch control?" So it's just I don't know. It's kind of cool.
Wow, and that was quite the treat there. I don't believe there's any pricing information or availability information yet, right? It's still too new.
You know, it's a 2018 model. I'm one of those sad people. I actually have to go back and look at my notes really quick and see. I have like 20 things going on today. And even though the meeting was literally like an hour ago, I'm just like, what did they talk about? 707 horsepower sticks in my brain, but that's right. About it.
You're like, it's a really fast family mobile at 707 horsepower.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So they did say no pricing info, but it should be in the dealers in the fourth quarter.
Okay, so let's see, that fourth quarter is going to be the end of the year, so we should get pricing probably August, September-ish. Usually, it's usually close to launch, so bring out the pricing. So I would anticipate it's going to be, you know what it's going to be? It's going to be a halo vehicle form, right? It's going to be a very low take rate, a very high price, but people will just buy it for the hell of it because they want to have fun. It's that kind of vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it looks really smart with the blacked out grill and the blacked out badging and, you know, the huge brakes and it's a very smart looking vehicle. So it'll definitely be a halo, but certainly a fun and interesting vehicle to check out. So, yeah, I mean, it was a total treat. We did not know this was coming to our meeting today. And so it was a complete surprise. I like walked up and I'm like, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? I'm seeing what I think I'm seeing. And Kelly actually said that this is the first time anybody has seen this outside of New York.
Wow. Yeah. And it's nice that they have that. It's, and I was going to talk about the color real fast. I don't think many listeners understands when you go to the auto show and you're walking around the indoors, the lighting in there is so much different that the colors look different. I remember getting a TRD Pro Tundra, and the beige sandy color, I didn't like it at all indoors, but outdoors I loved it. And so it's interesting you brought up that they have a special color on there just for auto shows, because the lighting in some of those convention centers is just terrible.
Oh, it's abominable. And I do have some photos that I took, so I'm happy. I will post them to the Facebook page you know, if you're listening to this, go to the Facebook page and you can check out some of the photos from today.
Yeah, it's a pickup truck talk. Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Sorry, I keep changing the name. I should have just left it the name the way it was. Head it down on the Facebook page. I do want to get to a programming note. I will be gone next week. I'll be driving a tank. I know you're sad to hear that. We will have a special episode. We're going to talk about Nissan Rogue Sport next week. So we're going to record that pretty soon and have that for you. And I'll have the tank when I get back. Jill and I were both in Nashville this week driving a new Nissan Rogue Sport, and we'll have all information about that new vehicle. And we'll have our impressions and drive impressions. Actually, excuse me, that'll be in 2 weeks because May 9th is an embargo. So we will probably not have a show next week because I will be on the road driving a tank.
Are you driving a tank next week?
I think so. There will be no podcast next week. The following week will be Nissan Rogue. We'll talk about that and our impressions, and then I'll have a tank segment somewhere mixed into all that goodness going on. So that's it for today's episode of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Make sure you find us out on Facebook, Pickup Truck Plus SUV. I got that right this time. Check us on website, pickuptrucktalk.com. Jill and I are both on Twitter. Find us that way and on Instagram. Any other final notes there, Jill? I don't want to cut you off.
I don't think so. I mean, coming up, I do want to tell people I'm driving a Cadillac XT5 this week.
Yes.
we can talk about that. Maybe not next week, but coming up. So,
Yes, I'll be interested to get your impressions of that. We're gonna talk about this show for those listeners, but she just got it last night. It's not really fair. And I drove it a few months ago, so it'd be interesting to compare notes.
Well, I can say one thing right now.
Oh yeah.
Within the first 5 minutes of driving the car, the vehicle both grabbed my boob and goosed me. So, yeah, wait for the comments on that.
That's a heck of a way to go out on the show note.
Okay, so a little bit of explanation. So you get in the car, and
Yes, please, please explain this.
as soon as you put it into gear, the seatbelt kind of retracts and like just pulls you into the seat. And I was just like, oh, wow, that was kind of unexpected. And it was a very strong embrace from the vehicle. And
Okay.
then as soon as I started to back out of the spot, the seat vibrates. So I'm like, I'm feeling a little bit violated here. But that's definitely going to take some getting used to. I mean, every time you do something, it's just like, oh, some kind of haptic feedback that's like, ah, okay, you're pushing me here, you're touching me here. I don't know how I feel about that. So, yeah.
We're gonna get all of Jill's senses
Yeah.
and insight in the Cadillac XT5 down the
So stay tuned. I
Stay
know you're
tuned.
waiting with bated breath now to hear about my full impressions of the new Cadillac XT5.
And you know what? If that doesn't get you to hit the subscribe button, I don't know what will get you to hit the subscribe button. And we'll see you next week. Or following week. Yes.
Thank you.